Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual today. And Jim, we start with a surprisingly good poll out of Michigan. It's still early, of course, in the Senate race out there. Most of the people in Michigan don't know much about either of the likely nominees for the open seat. Carl Levin is retiring after many terms there. But, you know, when we talk about Republicans possibly getting control of the Senate, we think about pickups in places like West Virginia and South Dakota, Arkansas, Louisiana maybe, Alaska, Montana, places like that. And then there's that second tier of if things go really, really well, maybe we can grab another one in another state. And one of those states is Michigan, given that it is an open seat. Terry Lindland, the former Secretary of State in Michigan, holds an 8-point lead, according to a Harper poll survey that's done in conjunction with conservative intel. She's up on Congressman Gary Peters, 44-36. The early polling in this race has always been pretty tight, but Peters at first was a little bit ahead. Then Terry Lindland was ahead within the margin of error. Now 8 points is obviously outside the margin of error. Also in this poll, we see that both Obama and Obamacare are insanely unpopular in Michigan. So that could be feeding into this a little bit. But right now it's looking good in a race that would have probably been wishful thinking a couple months ago.
Yeah, this is one of those poll results that really makes you sit up and say, wow. You expect a close race in, you know, a Republicans have potential for a close race in a state like Michigan. You're not counting on a fairly sizable Republican lead, and you kind of dig, all right, so why is Terry Lindland ahead by what looks like a considerable amount in this poll? She's been Secretary of State and passed through a couple efforts to, you know, try to fight voter fraud and voter ID. Maybe that resonates pretty well. You could say this is the lingering weakness of Obama and Obamacare. You could say, obviously, Gary Peters, the Democratic congressman who's supposed to be winning this thing in a walk, not exactly a whirling dervish of raw political charisma. And you know, he's a supporter of Obamacare and now says he voted for the bill that Obama said would gut Obamacare. So maybe a bit of a flip-flopper label sticking to him. Maybe it helps a bit to have a woman being the nominee. She has fantastic poll numbers amongst women in this poll. Can't help but wonder how much does the bankruptcy of Detroit kind of take the etch-a-sketch and shake it for the existing political culture of Michigan. There are a lot of places in Michigan that have kind of been running on left liberal Democratic Party politics for a really long time. And now in the city, in this biggest city in the state, there is this very vivid example of what it gets you, and what happens when you let Democrats run a city for about 40, 50 years without any serious challenge. They can run it right into the ground with big spending policies and corruption and failure to provide basic services, failure of accountability, inability to have good schools, good police, development of skills of a workforce. You know, Detroit's a mess. Ironically, by the way, the rest of Michigan is not such a mess, including the counties surrounding Detroit. Detroit has had this awful plummeting population. The suburbs around Detroit aren't doing quite so bad. So it really is kind of a more localized urban disaster, you could say. But in light of that, maybe the culture of Michigan is starting to shift a bit to the right. And that's fantastic news for Republicans, because we've seen a bunch of states like Florida and Virginia, Colorado, Nevada, that once were considered pretty reliably Republican, shifting to more of a purple area where obviously Obama's won and Democrats have been doing, you know, shown that they can definitely win. If any state kind of deserves or ought to be tired of liberal policies, I think Michigan ranks high up on the list there. And well, obviously it's early. There's about a year left to go. But certainly, you know, expanding the board and giving the Democrats a really tough race in Michigan would be a real feather in the cap of Republicans this cycle.
Yeah, that would be – if you win Michigan, you're likely to do pretty well in a lot of other states where the expectations are already pretty high. Another thing that might be working against Gary Peters, he was in the administration of Jennifer Granholm, who presided over the one state recession. So Michigan's been in rough economic straits a lot longer than most of the rest of the country, and he was in that administration, and I don't think that's doing him any favors in addition to his backing up.
I was going to say, do you think Jennifer Granholm could come in and kind of cheer up the crowd a little, do a little cheerleading for some rally for Peters maybe?
I might actually, if I could help arrange that, I would, because she's about as popular as a root canal in Michigan these days. So
I'm thinking of her pep rally routine at the Democratic convention of last time.
Oh, yes.
Unbelievably, vividly enthusiastic to the point where there were some calls for the drug testing of all speakers at the Democratic convention. But anyway, moving on to the bad martini, Greg.
I had forgotten that one. All right. We all have the lowest of expectations for Mayor Bill de Blasio, but there's a little bit of a scandal, not directly involving him, but involving his campaign to some extent. This is from the New York Post. U.S. Ambassador to South Africa, Patrick Gaspard, violated federal law barring government workers from engaging in partisan activity by promoting pal Bill de Blasio's mayoral campaign, according to an ethics complaint filed by Republican activist O'Brien Murray. Reports that Gaspard, President Obama's former political director, helped to pull strings from South Africa to aid de Blasio's campaign. Apparently, he also was involved in the campaign to help elect the new Speaker of the City Council. And it doesn't say exactly what he did here other than kind of broker the peace after a pretty fractious Democratic primary to make sure everybody was on board behind de Blasio. But bottom line is, you're not allowed to do that given the position he was in. So it should be fun to see how this one plays out, Jim.
Yeah, by the way, just a little background. I mean, Gaspard is a lifetime Democratic Party political hack. And it's really nothing new to see ambassadorships being given off to donors and other campaign activists. But look, this guy was, you know, working for SEIU back in the 2006 cycle, was Governor Howard Dean's national deputy field director back on that presidential campaign, worked for Obama campaign and was in the White House Office of Political Affairs, executive director of the DNC from 2011 to 2000. I mean, this is a Democratic Party hack. And while it's not surprising somebody who's got mostly there for partisan loyalty would get an ambassadorship, I know that, you know, there are career State Department people who have always kind of grind their teeth when they see these kinds of appointments. But once you become a U.S. ambassador, you're supposed to stop in political, you know, in political partisanship. Your job is to represent the country. And the Hatch Act is pretty clear on this, that there's a lot of cases where they'll cut some slack in terms of being doing some political activism. For, you know, congressional staffers will go on leave and then work on campaigns and stuff like that. But if you're a U.S. ambassador, you are not allowed to do jack squat for a partisan campaign. Well, in the case of Gaspard, basically you can't pick up the phone and start saying, okay, and I'm going to start working as a de facto volunteer for the de Blasio campaign. This is a, you know, pretty significant deal. You know, we'll see if this goes anywhere. I think the theme, certainly on Campaign Spot these days, is the investigation of alleged crimes in politics is getting to be, you know, coming down a very partisan line. You know, Kentucky, we're not expecting anything. In New Jersey, they're coming down on Christie like a ton of bricks. We'll see how this shakes out, but it certainly looks like one more example of the further politicization of the federal government. Even ambassadors, whose job is to be, you know, you'd think he'd be more focused on what's going on in, say, Johannesburg than what's going on in New York City politics.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And Jim initially suggested doing this one in Spanish, which, Jim, if you would like to, go for it. I took 3 years in high school, but I'm not sure that I'm qualified to do the entire conversation in Spanish. So right now, of course, there's the healthcare.gov site for Obamacare, the healthcare signups that is not going well. There's also a Spanish language version called cuidadodesalud.gov. And here's the Associated Press report on the problems with that. The translations were so clunky and full of grammatical mistakes that critics say they must have been computer-generated. The situation is even worse when applicants begin digging into the nitty-gritty of the plans. When you get into the details of the plans, it's not all written in Spanish. It's written in Spanglish. So we end up having to translate it for them. And, of course, in addition to all that, it says there are bugs. Some links on the site just take you right back to the English-language version. Sometimes the site doesn't work at all. So, Jim, you know, everyone wants equality, that no one wants to be treated any different than anybody else. So if you're on the Spanish language site, congratulations. You get just as many headaches as everybody who speaks English.
You know, Greg, yo estudio español en la escuela para dos años. Y yo generativo mucho C's. And I don't mean yeses. Pero yo comprendo what you just said. And, you know, I have, like, several friends who have, like, devoted their lives to foreign language education, and they're just appalled and shocked by me right now. Yeah, if it really is true, as this, you know, professor is alleging, that they used a translation program instead of getting some native Spanish speaker to go through and translate all the instructions and, you know, so that people would understand them, that's a pretty appalling, even by the standards of, even by the low standards of the Obama administration. Certainly for a party and an administration that likes to think of itself as being inclusive and sensitive and they care more and stuff like that. You are correct that this is not an issue of unequal treatment under the law because everyone is getting treated like crap by this administration. However, when you have circumstances like this, one, you can't believe that they're surprised that this isn't working. I mean, even I know that if you're using Google Translate or online stuff, you got maybe a 50-50 shot of it coming through comprehensible but not grammatically correct. And it just is another example, kind of the slipshod nature of the assembly of this. I mean, just one more further example. I think it's like the appropriate point here, Greg, is you know what they're calling the site?
Cuidado de Salud.
Yes, which actually translates to City of Salad. That's not the case, by the way. But it sounds like it would, wouldn't it? And we wouldn't be that surprised. Anyway, I will be working on the Turkish translation of the healthcare website for the burgeoning Turkish American population. These guys can't even translate correctly. How is the data getting through correctly and everything else? It's one more further example of this that it really does deserve to get thrown in Democrats' faces next time they have the audacity to claim that the Republicans are anti-Hispanic or some such nonsense like that.
Ay, caramba.
Ay, carambas. Ay.
Jim, just gets more amazing every day. Have a good one.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Carumbas of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Tuesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.